Welcome one and all to the latest eToro quarterly outlook. As always, please do like, share and subscribe if you like the content, and feel free to leave a comment if you have any questions. It's a pleasure to be your host today for the second quarter investment outlook. Please do take a moment to read over the disclaimer, and remember this is a marketing communication and should not be taken as investment advice, personal recommendation, or an offer of or solicitation to buy or sell any financial instruments. The last 3 months have been special. Many markets are trading at all-time highs, and therefore we have pulled in the big guns. Ben Laidler, our global market strategist, who famously used to put out fires for a living, has been on fire with his market calls ever since he made the transition into the world of finance. Brett Kenwell, one of the sharpest minds that the US has to offer, and is our US investment analyst to help guide us through what is going on across the pond. And we're also joined by Neza Molk, who has been an eToro popular investor for many years and has recently joined our exciting analyst team. You would have also seen her on Market Bites podcast as well. Please do remember to check out Digest and Invest for all your podcasts and webinars. Guys, how are we doing?
Yeah, great, Sam. Looking forward to it.
Excellent.
Very good, Sam. How are you?
Very well, very well. It's great to be the host today. I guess people are going to start asking the questions. Is it time to rebalance? Is it time for rotation? And how much attention do we need to give to the Fed? We're going to discuss all of that and more. But Ben, the first question, what happened in quarter one?
Yeah, how indeed did we get here? So I guess, you know, four takeaways. Firstly, very strong quarter. The fourth quarter rally just continued. S&P 500 up 10% in the first 3 months of this year, setting a new all-time high for the first time since 2021. And this is the traditional start, or the traditional signal for a new bull market. We also saw new all-time highs in Europe and also in Japan for the first time in 34 years, believe it or not. And the performance, you know, really broadened out from the US juggernaut into these other markets. Secondly, the main driver of all this was very fundamental. It was earnings growth. The Magnificent Seven big tech stocks saw profits up over 60% in the last quarter. And optimism on artificial intelligence really moved from hype to profits reality. NVIDIA sales up over 350% in the last quarter. You know, thirdly, at the same time, we push back on these big early interest rate cut hopes. They took a back seat. The US jobs market, GDP growth, still very strong. Europe saw only a small technical recession. And this kept bond yields, you know, pretty firm, kept the dollar strong, and that just rippled across markets. You know, hit the yen, it held back commodities. And then finally, we saw a lot of sort of stock stuff going on. The AI boom, as I say, continued. NVIDIA to ARM to Supermicro. Weight loss adoption continued to spread and helping Eli Lilly to Nordisk. We saw the return of IPOs after the IPO winter with Reddit, spin-offs planned from Unilever to Holcim. And it wasn't all positive. On the negative side, you know, Tesla really held back by price cuts and a slowdown of EV demand. Apple, some regulatory headwinds there. And Boeing just seemed to go from crisis to crisis. On the next slide, I just wanted to put some of this performance in perspective. If you look at the left-hand side, you know, crypto, Bitcoin left all other assets really in the dust. You know, a classic supply-demand squeeze. Inflows into the new spot Bitcoin ETFs. They now own 4% of all Bitcoins just since their mid-January launch. And on the supply side, you know, 90% of all Bitcoin are already in existence. And next month's halving event will just curb this supply growth even more. So, you know, as always, a lot going on.
Yeah, it's been a busy quarter one. And I guess investors are going to be asking themselves the question, can this momentum that we've seen continue? And look, I mean, the rate cut is obviously going to be very important to that, or potential rate cuts, I should say.
So, yeah, I'll tell you what the crystal ball says. So the crystal ball says this is going to be another positive quarter, but not as good as last quarter. We're going to see some sort of slowdown, you know, after the huge one we've just had. You know, if you look at the calendar, and those that are looking on demand can see it on the previous slide, you know, three things really stand out for this coming quarter. So we've got earnings season for first quarter, which starts on the 12th of April with JP Morgan. We have these June rate cuts from sort of heavyweights, the Fed, the ECB, maybe even the Bank of England. And then thirdly, we have this continued heavy election calendar from India to the European Union. So just quickly taking that in order. So firstly, you know, we're looking for more evidence of this global economic soft landing. So the US is sort of going at gangbusters, sort of 3% right now. That's going to cool towards 2%. The European Union, China will stabilize, may even start to recover. And this should all support this recovery of earnings growth, you know, globally, to the sort of 10% rates we're seeing in the US, to a smaller profits recession in Europe this quarter, and a sharp rebound, you know, later in the year. You know, secondly, it's really reality time for rate cuts. We've talked about them for a lot. Now we actually need to see them. The broader global interest rate cycle has already decisively changed. The number of global rate cuts is running 3-1 versus the number of hikes. And Switzerland just last week was the first developed market central bank to actually cut interest rates. But the heavyweights are set for June. The ECB is probably going to lead, followed by the Fed. And this is a double positive, because what this does is it supports economic and therefore earnings growth, and it also helps valuations. And then the third thing to be aware of, there are plenty of things to worry about. There always are. Markets always climb a wall of worry. Performance for stocks has started to broaden out. That's very healthy, but it's still very focused on the US and tech. So there's really no room for a stumble there. Inflation still remains the most important number in markets. It drives everything. It drives rate cuts. It drives the economic outlook. We've been seeing this sort of immaculate disinflation so far. Falling inflation, even though economic growth is pretty strong, because we're having a productivity boom. Again, no room for change there. And half the world is voting, you know, this year. This quarter, we've got the world's biggest democracy, you know, India going to the polls. We've got South Africa, we've got Mexico, we've got the European Union. And then just finally, I mean, the health check on all of this is that we are due for a market pullback. You know, we're annualizing the best returns for the S&P 500 in over 70 years. Typically, markets see a, you know, 2-5% pullbacks a year. We haven't seen a single one yet. Your average intra-year decline during the year is 14%. We've seen nothing like that so far. So we're going to see some weakness. It comes with the territory. But my message is it should not be feared, as long as the fundamentals remain in place of this double-digit earnings recovery and interest rate cuts. And we still have a lot of cash on the sidelines. There's $7 trillion nearly in US money market funds, for example. And I think if we do see a pullback, that's going to come off the sidelines into the market. Just to wrap it up from me, on the next slide, I just wanted to show you a recent investor poll we did of what people are thinking about markets. So this is the consensus, if you like. So on the top left, you can see asset classes, crypto and stocks, still by far the most favored assets. And they were, of course, the best performers last year. Interestingly, commodities creeping into that sort of third place ahead of bonds, which is a much bigger asset class. On the top right, which regions are expected to see the best stock performance? The US, maybe unsurprisingly, by far and away the favorite, but some contrarian interest building in places like China and emerging markets. And then the other extreme, you can see Japan, the world's third biggest market and the best performing market, still very much out of sight, out of mind. Bottom left, you can see the sectors, tech, the overwhelming favorite. But again, with some signs of this sort of building rotation and broadening into these cheaper, more rate-sensitive laggard sectors like financials and energy. And then just finally, on the bottom right, you can see the themes that people are looking at, tech and crypto, you know, really driving disruptive tech and crypto assets there. And interestingly, clean tech, which is one of the favorites in the past, now plunging to only fourth, as obviously renewable stocks, Tesla, have really been under pressure in the last quarter or so. That's it.
Thank you very much, Ben. It's always interesting to see those poll results. And obviously, let us know in the chat if you agree, if you disagree. I mean, what we've got there, region that we expect to perform best in quarter two, the US, the most common answer there, which brings us on quite nicely to Brett, who's going to talk about the US, as we know, probably is always going to be the most important market that there is. The Fed with these rate cuts, Brett, I mean, it's incredibly important that they get it right. Can they thread the needle?
Yeah, Sam, thanks. I think that's the big question on the U.S. side, at least in the interim, is can the Fed thread the needle when it comes to these rate cuts, right? When we came into Q4, or when we came into January at the end of Q4, you know, the market was pricing in, I believe, 6 rate cuts to start in March. Those expectations have not only gone down in terms of number of cuts, but have also been pushed out in terms of the market now expecting June is the most likely time frame, but summer, surely. And the Fed, you know, the Fed came out recently and we heard from Chairman Powell and he spoke optimistically about rate cuts, perhaps catching, you know, I'd say maybe catching some investors off guard who were thinking maybe the Fed would, you know, also kind of taper in those expectations, considering that, you know, we're already through Q1 and it was clear they weren't going to cut rates in March. And as, you know, our focus shifted to the end of Q2 for the next cut. So there was maybe an expectation there that they were going to taper that in and dial it back, but the Fed stuck with their guns at the same forecast they outlaid in December when it comes to 2024. They still expect 3 cuts this year. And, you know, I think we're seeing that message kind of reverberate through the U.S. equity markets. We've seen a lot of strength in the S&P in general. We just hit another new high yesterday. And, you know, we're starting to see some of those interest rate sensitive sectors like utilities and real estate have been picking back up. Bonds and small caps have been trading a little better these last few days. You know, for me, that's where I'm kind of curious to see in Q2 and especially in the second half of this year when, at least at the current expectations, we will be officially in the rate cutting portion of the cycle. If those asset classes continue to perform, you know, continue to perform well, just like they did in Q4 on the idea that rate cuts were just around the corner. Now that proved a little bit too early and we kind of saw, you know, as you can see on the sector performance chart on the right there, where, you know, real estate and utilities, some of the more interest rate sensitive sectors have lagged. But, you know, the Fed is trying really, really hard to get this right. They don't want to run the risk of cutting too early and having inflation spike back up. And they don't want to wait too long where it creates a risk to the labor market. Already we're seeing, while we're seeing a strong labor market, by no means am I, you know, waving the caution flag that the labor market's in dire straits or in some sort of major jeopardy. But we're starting to see a little bit of those minor cracks forming in the labor market. I'm trying to myself thread the needle here. We're not raising an alarm, but also being realistic about it. You know, last month we saw the unemployment rate jump from 3.7 to 3.9. Average hourly earnings were a little light, lower than the consensus expectations. So while the headline numbers for the jobs market has been strong, there's below the surface, there's a little bit of concern. But, you know, the Fed's kept their eye on that. They're not, you know, it's not like they don't see that coming. And at this point, they've made a lot of progress on inflation. And it does not appear, especially based on Chairman Powell's recent comments, they do not seem likely to, you know, thrust the U.S. economy into a recession just to get over this last hurdle of inflation. So I think the Fed is handling it as best as they can. I think they're doing a good job so far. And, you know, we have PCE report coming up, a few more data points that they can analyze before we get to that June meeting. But like Ben said, that's the consensus right now. And to reiterate, actually, you know, Ben's point, he hit the nail on the head. When he said that, Q2 and going forward, we have a optimistic but realistic expectation for US equities.
Thank you very much, Brett. And there's this chart here as well, which you put in, and I guess it just shows the performance year to date of the S&P 500, the Russell 2000, and bonds as well.
Yeah, just sort of highlighting how well, and we've seen great breadth expansion, right? We've seen more, go back 9 to 12 months ago, we were coming out of a regional banking scare and basically the Magnificent Seven leading the way higher, and Eli Lilly, if you want to throw them in too. And now, we see a number of sectors leading the way. I believe five sectors are up 9% or more so far year to date. And we're seeing that strength in the, the larger market cap, the bigger companies. And we're seeing small caps lag and bonds lags, the interest rate sensitive names. So it'll be interesting to see if we see that rotation back later this quarter and maybe in the second half of the year.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting second half of the year. As Ben mentioned earlier on, the S&P 500 annualizing at best year, wait for this, since 1954. Is there anyone in the chat that reckons we're going to finish the year equaling that? I think someone will have to eat a hat if that is to happen, but you never, ever know in markets at the moment. Neja, we're going to come on to you here, and obviously we've been on Market Bites recently. We've talked about different themes, so I think it's great that you're here to discuss a few. I mean, last year and into this year, of course, AI has been one of the biggest buzzwords, as has weight loss drugs, right? And we've had a incredible market rally in Japan, where it's reached these highs. How do you see all of that at the moment?
So it was quite hard to pick just three topics to focus on because it's a lot happening on the market. But if we go straight to weight loss drugs have become a game changer in fight against obesity. And we already mentioned Eli Lilly, which is one of the leaders in the industry. And there is also Novo Nordisk. Each of those companies developed two drugs. If we go to Novo Nordisk first, they develop Ozempic, which is actually FDA approved for type 2 diabetes. And the second drug, which has the same active ingredient, is Wegovy. This one is FDA approved for treating obesity. And Eli Lilly developed Zepbound and Mounjaro. Mounjaro is like Ozempic approved for treating type 2 diabetes. And Zepbound got FDA approval for treating obesity in November last year. Demand for those drugs is huge. And we saw that in their latest earnings reports. If we take a look at Eli Lilly, the revenue came in around $35 billion, which is almost 20% higher than last year. And Mounjaro alone accounted for more than $5 billion in sales. In Novo Nordisk, their revenue came in 30% higher than last year. And for them, Ozempic accounted for more than 40% in total sales, which is around $14 billion. And those earnings were really strong. Novo Nordisk market value even surpassed $500 billion at the end of January, which made them the most valuable European public company. So as you see, demand for weight loss drugs is huge, and despite challenges like side effects, and we have insurance, they don't cover all of the costs, and costs are really high, other companies are trying to enter the field. We have, for example, Amgen and Roche. Amgen is developing one drug that is in phase two trials, and first results were quite promising. And Roche, on the other hand, they acquired a company who has three different drugs under development for weight loss. And there are not just those big pharma companies who are trying to enter the field. There are also different startups that might shake things up if they succeed at developing new weight loss drugs. So I think that there is lots of potential in this field. Wall Street even predicts that this weight loss field could reach $100 billion by the end of the decade. However, basically everything is depends on successful development and regulators' approval. So the second topic that I choose, and we already mentioned this one, is market in Japan. Japan's stock market has just recently recovered from the effects of 1980s financial bubble burst. We saw Tokyo Stock Exchange Index Nikkei 225 reaching above 40,000 points, which is a new all-time high. And there are a few reasons behind this rise. One reason are record corporate earnings. Corporate earnings from manufacturers like Toyota, for example, were really good. And companies in Japan also profited from higher overseas interest rates and lower commodity prices. Besides that, weaker yen also contributed to this better earnings results. The third factor contributing to their growth were corporate governance reforms. They're changing those reforms, and now public companies have to share their plans for managing their capital better in benefits for their shareholders. And the big change that happened in Japan was changing their monetary policy. After 17 years of fighting deflation, Bank of Japan decided to raise interest rates to around 0 to 0.1%. And some overseas investors already seeked opportunities in markets in Japan. We saw Warren Buffett investing in five big Japanese companies. He started investing in 2020, and latest financial report from Berkshire Hathaway revealed that he even increased his positions, and now he owns about 8-9% of each of those companies. So I think Japanese market is definitely worth keeping an eye on. However, changes in monetary policy might affect future companies' decisions and their performance. So if we continue with AI, AI was a big trend in 2023. And now the question is how AI will develop and how it will affect other industries. We saw Nvidia, for example, who was a big gainer because of AI. Currently, they are trading above their historical price-to-earnings ratio at around 77, but expectations from the company still remain high. And if they manage to transfer this hype to reality, we might see some more upside potential. However, artificial intelligence is not just about tech industry anymore. We see that it is spreading to other areas as well. BMW, for example, they lowered their defected products being shipped because of their new AI vision system. However, in 2024, AI already faces some challenges. Regulators, for now, they just watched and observed what is happening with artificial intelligence development, but now it's their time for action. US hasn't made any change yet, but we saw that European Parliament just put in place first artificial intelligence rules. Their aim is actually to balance innovation with rights and so on. But the big question is how can those rules be updated all the time with fast development of artificial intelligence? But no matter what happens, I think that companies and regulators will have to start working with artificial intelligence because it is out there and we can't undo it. If we take a look at the next slide, we can see how artificial intelligence stocks outperformed S&P 500 this year so far. It doesn't mean that this trend will continue. However, if these companies can transfer this hype into reality, we might see some more upside potential. We also see results of our latest survey and how retail investors are still interested in investing in AI stocks. So it will be definitely something to talk about on other episodes as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And if anyone does want to check out the latest retail investor beat, we just recorded that. It's available on all podcast platforms and really interesting, just discussing those themes there. And if anyone listening to this wants a specific episode, a stock break episode on a specific company, please do let us know. We've got a great analyst team that is more than happy to go through that. And of course, Neza, Josh, and I can all discuss things on market bites as well. Neza, we'll come back to you Brett and Ben, actually, in a Q&A very shortly. We've been sent in some questions, some rather interesting questions from our listeners. So we'll go through those in a moment. Ben, just before we do get to that, let's have a little bit of a wrap up of what we've discussed so far before the Q&A.
So sorry, just bringing all this together for what it actually means for your portfolios. I would say a couple of things. So one, you know, we're bullish on stock markets for this year with these twin sort of bull market pillars of recovering earnings and interest rate cuts. And we have cash on the sidelines, which I think will cushion the inevitable pullbacks which are going to come. Just remember, your average bull market lasts about 5 years and is about 150%. So we may just be in the very early innings of this, I think. Secondly, I would fully expect performance, which has been very US and big tech led, to continue to sort of broaden out to these sort of cheaper, more economically sensitive bits of the world, which are most sensitive to our base case of lower interest rates and an economic soft landing. So this is sectors like financials, industrials, real estate, and it's parts of the world which are full of those sectors, like Europe and like emerging markets. But I think these last hard inflation yards from 3 to 2% are going to be the hardest. And I think this will continue to hold back bonds and keep bond yields, you know, reasonably high. But interest rate cuts are still going to come, maybe slightly less and fewer and later than we initially thought. But this will absolutely, I think, reduce the appeal of cash going forward as those rates come and push investors into other assets. I think these US rate cuts will also take some of the wind out of the sails of the US dollar, which has been very strong this year. And that will give some relief to other currencies which have underperformed, especially the Japanese yen, which is by far the cheapest of the major currencies out there. I also think a more stable or weaker dollar will give some support to this stealth rally we've been seeing from commodities in recent weeks. And then finally on crypto, it will be as volatile as ever, but the world's smallest, youngest, and most retail-dominated asset class, I think, will continue to see this classic supply-demand squeeze with the catalyst of the April halving, the May spot Ethereum ETF decision in the US, and the rate cuts coming from the Fed in June.
Thank you very much, Ben. And if you have enjoyed this webinar, please remember, like, share, subscribe, drop a comment if you agree, if you disagree. We're not going to bite in response. So look, we've got six questions, two for each of you, which have been sent in. Brett, I'm going to come to you first. We talked quite a lot about it because it's clearly important. But in less than a minute for each of these answers, by the way, how big of a role do rate cuts play in US markets?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. Maybe a little difficult to quantify, right? Because, you know, as we kind of talked about earlier, when we came into this year, the bond market was pricing in, I believe, 5 to 6 rate cuts to begin in March. And, you know, we've seen that expectation cut in half and pushed out. And yet the markets have just continued to rally. So I think in some ways it doesn't have as big of an impact as, you know, maybe it seems like going on the surface. It maybe does not have the same type of impact we might think. But at the same time, as Ben just alluded to, there's so much cash on the sidelines. And right now, that cash is generating a pretty nice return, a risk-free return. And when you start to see that reward side of it go down, you start to earn less on that cash. Investors are naturally going to look for places to put that cash to work and try to generate a better return. And so I think from that perspective, it plays a huge role. As it always has been going into this case, it remains a when we will see rate cuts, not if we will see rate cuts from the Fed.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Neza, a question for you specifically, this one was, how does AI influence the pharma industry, particularly in identifying drug candidates for weight loss medications?
Developments in artificial intelligence are changing how pharmaceutical companies are developing new drugs. If we take an example of Moderna, they were actually using artificial intelligence for developing of their COVID-19 vaccine. It just made process faster, as we saw, And this AI technology can be also used for developing new weight loss drugs. AI can be used for analyzing patterns, or maybe it can indicate which compound can be good for potential new drug. So with that, researchers can actually focus on the most promising candidate, focus on this one. The process is faster and also more cost efficient for the companies.
Thank you. AI does everything now, doesn't it? Within 3 months, we might not even be sitting here ourselves. Ben, this question is for you, and you can answer it any way that you want. What keeps you awake at night?
In the investment world, I'm assuming. So I would say two things. So one, concentration risk. What I mean by that, US stocks are over 60% of global market cap. That's three times the size of the US economy proportionally. So truly supersized. So if the US catches a cold, the rest of the world's going to get pneumonia, quite frankly. And there's basically nowhere to hide. Maybe China's uncorrelated and out of favor enough, but very, very difficult to find places to hide if the US really stumbles here. Not our base case, but worth keeping in mind, especially as the US political cycle really gets going into the November election. And then secondly, just quickly, inflation. As I say, we've been having this immaculate disinflation in the US, driven by this productivity boom. Productivity growth twice long-term average levels, helped along by tech adoption and AI. But again, you've got to be laser focused on that. God help us if that comes to an end.
Yeah, as you said, not the base case, but something to consider for sure. Brett, your final question. Will big tech slash Magnificent Seven lead US stocks higher like they did in mid-2023?
Yeah, so last year, we saw Magnificent Seven really shoulder the load and kind of buoy US equity markets at a time where breadth and sector participation was rather disappointing, to be blunt about it. As we turn the page into 2024 and we're one quarter in, we're already seeing so much more participation on the sector side, and we're seeing financials, industrials, energies, materials. So many different groups are doing well now, and if you extrapolate even beyond the U.S., we see a number of global stock indices at new all-time highs. We see Bitcoin and gold doing well. So it's this rally has really broadened out just from a few, really focused names, like a top 10 or a top seven, to a number of different asset groups. So that in itself is a bullish development. It's something that we like to see. That doesn't mean it's bad news for the Magnificent Seven. It doesn't mean it's bad news for big tech. They can just, they outperformed and performed so well last year, it would be healthy, quite frankly, for them to take a little bit of a rest and just kind of participate at a normal pace with the rest of the market. So AI is obviously a little bit of a wild card in there. If these companies can adopt AI and see it hit the top line, like we're obviously seeing that with NVIDIA, and it's been so explosive. So if we can see that, then they can outperform. But yeah, overall, it wouldn't be surprising to see them, take a little bit of a break from the leadership role.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. Neza, for you, is positive sentiment about Japan momentum, or do you see more long-term potential on the market?
Good one, as we see Japanese markets on the all-time highs. So here are a few factors to consider. First one, we saw quite a few fundamental changes. We saw changes in corporate governance reforms. We saw that Japan is finally exited from deflation, and that's all positive news. There's also lots of optimism from investors about investing in their market. But we also have to consider risks that are associated. As we know, yen is very, very weak at the moment, but that can change, and that might affect how companies are performing. Besides that, macroeconomical changes are happening pretty fast, and that is also a factor to consider before investing at that market.
Thank you very much. And Ben, our last Q&A, we're coming to you. Let's talk about asset classes that you might potentially see a surprise in.
Yeah, good question. So if I think back to that sort of asset class ranking on one of the previous slides, I think, where could I be wrong? I think commodities could easily be one. As I say, we've been seeing a little bit of a stealth rally in the last few weeks that could easily extend if the dollar really does begin to weaken here, if China continues to stabilize or stimulate its economy, and these interest rate cuts sort of come through and help economic growth. You know, things like cocoa have grabbed a lot of the headlines, but overall the asset class has not done well. You know, some of these really big commodities, you know, natural gas, 25-year lows, wheat, corn prices have, you know, halved off their highs. So they say the solution to low prices is low prices. So I keep an eye on that. And secondly, you know, some of these currencies, especially the yen, I guess, just to maybe connect it with what Neza was saying earlier, the yen's been surprisingly weak after the Bank of Japan started to raise interest rates. It's already very cheap. The authorities are now being forced to sort of verbally intervene. Maybe that's putting a little bit of a floor under that currency weakness. And as we get US rate cuts, maybe that'll narrow that interest rate differential between the two countries and maybe be a catalyst for better yen performance from here.
Yeah, thank you very much. And that brings us to the end of our second quarter investment outlook. It's been an incredible first 3 months of the year. Can it continue? We've discussed it all, but now is the time to let us know what you think. Remember, you can head to Digest and Invest on eToro to find podcasts, webinars, videos, courses, whatever you want, you will find it there. Ben, Brett, Neza, thank you very much.